Producer Jake Warga brings us this week's Nature Stories podcast about one of the world's most endangered species, the mountain gorilla. I'm Samantha Brown from Atlantic Public Media, curating this podcast with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Each week we bring you pieces about the intersection between people and place. Up now, Rwanda gorillas.
When I arrived at the gorilla trekking base camp near Ruwengeri at the foot of Volcanoes National Park, the first thing I did was to throw up. Violently. You see, in Rwanda, drivers believe they're behind the wheel of race cars, not near-death imports on bad roads. There's a lot of swerving to avoid potholes, livestock, people carrying large loads on their heads, and fate. I get carsick.
720 of the mountain gorillas in the world.
This is John. He's our guide to visiting the mountain gorillas.
But now, the number is increasing. Okay, here I have the pictures for the group we are going to see.
He passes around a page with pictures of the gorilla family.
Because this group has 11 gorillas.
Chief at the top and 5 females, each with only one baby.
Just this is the chief. It's called Munyinya.
Next to each photo is a strange drawing. Ugly T and Y shapes.
The sign is called the nose plant. Help us to identify ancient gorillas in the forest.
I have to admit, I'm a bit disturbed by the use of a nasal index.
By the nose?
Yes, by the nose. Nose print.
Around 1860, an Englishman named John Speke stumbled through Africa searching for the source of the Nile, which he would come to name Lake Victoria. But he brought with him the decidedly Victorian fad of race science. In traveling this region, John Speke found among people living peacefully together a, quote, superior race of oval faces, large eyes, and high noses. He theorized that these people, called Tutsis, came from what is now Ethiopia and were descended from a lost tribe of Christians, therefore superior. So two groups who lived together had the first wedge placed between them. And 130 years later, in April of 1994, tens of thousands of Tutsi bodies would flow into Lake Victoria to be sent back on the Nile to Ethiopia. The Tutsi, Speke noted in his chapter titled Fauna, sit apart from the other tribes, including the Hutus, by, quote, a marked characteristic of a bridged instead of a bridgeless nose.
Okay.
We were stuffed in the back of a Land Cruiser for the drive to the trailhead. Safari bench-style seats offer little absorption, and the road? Well, I wouldn't actually call it a road.
If you have an SUV at home, you have never been off-roading.
The road.
Yeah.
It's an African massage.
Children are everywhere, and population is one of the biggest health issues facing Rwanda. Women in rural areas like these have an average of 6 children. I'm trying not to throw up again in the car, going no faster over sharp rocks than the entourage of children gliding alongside us.
If we had some milk with us, we'd have butter by the time we got there.
Dick Ormrod is part of the people-to-people ambassadors group I'm traveling with. Later, a gorilla will shove him harmlessly out of her way, but he doesn't know this yet. We are not yet tourists in the mist. When the car can go no further, we walk.
Now, if you are ready, let's go.
We walk through farms and fields till we get to a stone wall, the border of the forest. Before entering, we get the safety speech, including how we should thump on our chests if the gorilla charges.
Sometimes the silverback can charge. When the silverback charges, just beat on the chest. Just you stay in the same place. Don't move. Don't learn. If you learn, it's not good.
We also get a language lesson on how to speak gorilla.
It's me. it's just to make happy. To make everyone happy. Yeah.
We climb the stone wall and enter into the dense forest. It's so dark and mysterious under the canopy, I call Frodo? Gandalf? The trackers look at me funny. The first thing we see is the giant silverback's, well, giant backside. Its butt. Climbing cautiously around, I kneel through the brush to photograph his face and profile. Enormous head to match the body and a very human face because I understood the sidelong look he gives me. I've given it before. It's universal. You've interrupted my nap. Then a baby gorilla tumbles towards him, somewhere between somersaulting and spinning. It's hard to tell, just a dark ball of happy fur. The chief then puts his enormous human face in his enormous human hand. The exacerbation and sigh are human, too. Great. More tourists. And now my kid wants to play. I'll never get that nap.
Okay, this baby, this small baby, has 8 months. And another one, you have seen up there, has 1 year and 2 months.
What are the names?
The name of the baby? It's called the Agasalo. It means shining stone.
Shiny stone?
Yes.
Despite the cute furry body, the baby's face looks old, experienced, and wise. It climbs onto its mother's back, and they slowly shuffle off to eat another plant. They're eating everything within reach, because basically, they live in a salad. We only visit the family for about 30 minutes before it's time to go, limiting their exposure to humans. We're very alike. It's dangerous. They can even catch our colds. During the genocide, the gorilla's human security was gone, so they were under threat of poachers. But also, their birth rates went down. They weren't having any children. John was here in 94, in school, mostly hiding from house to house.
It was terrible. It was a very, very hard situation. When there is not the security in the country, automatically in the forest also.
The gorillas felt the stress the country was under. They had become so habituated to people that when people stopped coming, they actually got depressed. And that's one theory why they didn't have any children.
The number for the gorillas started to grow after the genocide. To save the gorillas, we saved the life of the country.
Coming off the mountain and out of the forest, we walk back through people's farms to get to the road and the dreaded off-road drive back. People here are poor, very poor. But I notice flowers lining the paths between the crops and houses. They serve no purpose. It's beautiful. Children start to follow us, and one mother working in a field with a child on her back, wrapped in colorful cloth, smiles and waves at me. I smile and wave back.
This podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, online at nature.org/stories. Committed to protecting nature and preserving life. To hear more pieces like these, go to the Public Radio Exchange, prx.org. For the Nature Stories podcast, I'm Samantha Brown.